To the Helsinki China podcast. My name is Julie Yuen Chen, Professor of Chinese Studies at University of Helsinki, Finland. Join me today to talk about classical Chinese poetry is Tero Dahtinen. He's a PhD candidate at Tampere University in Finland. Tero offered a course on Chinese poetry at our University of Helsinki this summer. It was a summer course open to all students in Finland, and his course received very positive feedback. So I'm very happy to have you back, Tero. Can you tell us a bit about who you are and what kind of research are you doing?
Well, first, thank you very much, Professor Chen. I think you already mentioned the main points. So I'm a PhD scholar, the Department of Comparative Literature in Tampere University. And I'm doing research. It's kind of extremely simple, but it's quite difficult to explain by words. So if I want to put it in summary, I would say that I'm trying to do a research about the relationship between human or culture, if you wish, and nature or something non-human. Very often, like the main paradigm in the nature poetry or landscape poetry is that there's a kind of a meeting. There is some kind of human presence, and then there is some kind of non-human presence. It could be a landscape, it could be a bird, animal, a tree, a flower, anything. And then the human presence, even if it's not explicitly there, as long as you use language, which is a human construct, so there is at least implicitly, so there's somebody who is experiencing something. And the main claim in my research, that it's a progress, work in progress, is that this relationship is something very different in the Chinese tradition than what we are used to here in the West.
Right. So maybe to be more specific, what exactly is the difference? Maybe you can tell us a bit about the natural images presented in classical Chinese poems, and maybe it will then show us the Chinese way of looking at human-nature relationship.
If we think about, for instance, the concept of landscape, which is very prominent in landscape poetry. The Western concept of landscape is something visual. It's part of something bigger, part of nature in some specific locations, like a scenery. So, for instance, you can say that, oh, in that place, there is extremely beautiful landscape. And then you have to go there to see yourself and see, oh, it's really beautiful. Then you come back. And this kind of idea that landscape is something that is perceived, it's usually something very visual, and it makes a kind of ontological division between the subject and the object. There's somebody who sees and something that is seen. Somebody is the perceiver and something is perceived. If you look at the Chinese counterpart, shanshui, the concept, shanshui, which means the landscape, it has a mountain and a water. So it's something completely different. The Chinese concept takes these two elements, which are quite contrary to each other, and puts them together. Mountain is something that is very looming and something stable and huge, and it has a kind of distinct form, and it's very stable, whereas water is something that it has no color, it has no smell, it has no taste. It doesn't have a form. It's something that moves, and it can take different types of forms. So in Chinese cosmology, landscape is kind of an interplay of these two distinct elements. And the mountains are like the framework that gives the frame of what we experience. And then the water is kind of something that makes it alive. And it's kind of this constant interplay of these two elements. And of course, water can be liquid, it can be gas, it can be mist, it can be clouds, anything. And if you look at, for instance, the traditional Chinese landscape paintings, you very often see this interplay of these two elements. For instance, the mountain peak can be shrouded by the white clouds. It disappears, it's enveloped by white clouds. But at the same time, this peak is kind of penetrating through the mist and the clouds, and they dissolve, and maybe they rain and they create a river. So it's more like these processes that are in constant change. And of course, it makes no ontological division between a human being and nature, or the landscape and the perceiver. Human being is essentially part of this interplay of these energies. And very often when you look at these Shanshui paintings in China, if you look closely enough, you see this tiny human creature somewhere amidst the bamboos or the mountain peaks or the gnarled pine trees. So human being is essentially part of these natural processes.
I'm just wondering if you can give us an example of a poem that used this kind of, concept.
For instance, Wang Wei has a poem on Lake Yi, where he is seeing off his friend, and they're rowing a boat on this serene evening, and somebody's playing a flute. And in the last line of the poem, it says that the mountains are surrounded by white clouds. So, and maybe for a Western reader, it's not a very ecstatic ending of a poem. A mountain peak is surrounded by white clouds. But if you look at it against the backdrop and the background of this Chinese natural philosophy, it actually reminds the reader of the eternal processes that are interplaying in the nature. And it actually has a much more deeper and more significant meaning that you might miss if you are not familiar with the tradition.
I'm just thinking, in a way you have said it, but perhaps we can delve a bit further, because you were saying that the Western way of visualizing it seems to separate the human beings from the non-human nature. So is this the main difference that you see in Chinese poetry and Western poetry? And how about Finnish poetry? I don't know much about Finnish poetry.
The classical Chinese poetry was written in classical Chinese. And it's a language that differs greatly from at least all the Western languages that I know, English, Swedish, German, Finnish. For instance, in the classical Chinese, you can write a sentence without a distinct explicit subject, which is something that is extremely difficult to do in the Western language. In the Western languages, the standard paradigm is that somebody is doing something to something. So there's a subject, there's a verb, and there's an object. And then when you write Chinese poetry, it's very often you can express doing without making clear who actually is doing. Or there can be experience, and it's not clear who is actually the subject of this experience. So it gives more room to this kind of selfless experience, like being part of the nature. And I would say that when I've been teaching this to Finnish students, and we often discuss about this question, what kind of would be experience without experiencer, perception without perceiver, one thing that very often comes up is that when you walk in the forest and sometimes you reach this kind of extremely calm state of mind, you kind of lose yourself, you become part of something bigger. That is a very distinct experience in classical Chinese poetry. And because of the open grammar of the classical Chinese language, it has more tools to express this kind of selfless experiences. In the Western tradition, there are, of course, also this kind of experiences of being one with something greater. But it's often seen as some kind of a mystical experience or ecstatic experience, a little bit like mysterious. You could mention like William Blake, for instance, who talks about seeing the eternity on the palm of your hand and seeing the cosmos in a grain of a sand. but it's often understood as some kind of a mystical experience, something a little bit otherworldly. But the interesting thing about Chinese poetry, it's the Chinese were never really interested in the world beyond this world, outside the concrete world. So in a way, the Chinese poetry, it's mystical, but it's never otherworldly. It always takes place in the concrete realm of the mountains and rivers. We have some poems in Finnish too, I've managed to detect. So this kind of element and experience exists also in the Western tradition. But I would say that we don't have the toolbox that we have is smaller than those Chinese poets.
Very interesting. And in a way, philosophical, I guess. You know, this is kind of in the Chinese psyche.
That's very important, because in the Chinese tradition, you cannot really make a division, religion, philosophy, art, because they're all, like, there is no clear division. They're all interconnected.
Very interesting. Well, thank you very much, Daryl, for sharing your insights with us. Well, you have been listening to Helsinki China Podcast with me, Julie Yuen Chen, and then Daryl Dakdinen at Tampere University. Talk to you again next time.